Back together, you and I, on a Monday, December 6th, 2021, right here on Connecticut Today. We had comments from earlier in the day from Governor Ned Lamont and State Revenue Services Commissioner Mark Boughton on a new Connecticut tax amnesty program. Bridgeport State Rep. Steve Stastrom came back to drop by the show and talk about some recent controversy regarding the possible locations of retail marijuana shops in the city of Bridgeport. And I had some initial thoughts on the passing of former GOP Senate leader and presidential nominee Bob Dole and the politics of his generation and whether or not it was just better back then. I had a thought over the weekend, and it's dangerous, yes, because sometimes my mind does function, even when I'm not talking to you folks between 2 and 6 every day. But we all saw and were kind of touched, I would think, if you're about my age, maybe if you're in your late 40s, early 50s, and older, the death of Bob Dole. Bob Dole, living a long life, died at 98 years old, had been battling, I guess, lung cancer, which is pretty bad most times, especially if you're a non-smoker, a smoker or a non-smoker, but especially if folks get it and they have not smoked. So Bob Dole had a good run, as they say, 98 years plus on this earth. Of course, a paratrooper, which ended up giving him a lifelong injury, a disability with one of his arms and his hands. But getting downed, I believe it was in Italy in World War II, and then ascending through Congress to become a Senate leader, ran for president, had a presidential campaign 3 times. He actually got the nomination back in 1996, which seems, you know, so long ago. But yeah, 1996, 25 years ago, if I'm doing the math right. Yeah. And in that race, you may remember he was kind of a sacrificial lamb to Bill Clinton and Al Gore. Mr. Clinton, despite all the stuff that was swirling around him, ran and won a second term. You remember, maybe you do, maybe you don't, that Jack Kemp was Bob Dole's running mate. So the Kemp-Dole ticket falling short in 1996. He had run a couple of times before, but he was from a different time in politics, right? He was from a different time. And I was thinking about this over the weekend and hearing a lot of Bob Dole's old convention clips, his debate clips, you know, and there was a guy, well, that was 25 years ago, so he died at 98. There was a guy who, you know, again, later in life, at 73, was running for the White House and, you know, put up with a lot of, well, he's too old, this, that, and the other. But God, he was good. He was good on the campaign trail, very vivacious. But the thing that really hit me about that is, man, it was 25 years ago, and it seems to me, and this is part of the question I pose today to kick us off, and you can chime in on it, too, at 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Today, contrast politics of today with the politics of Bob Dole's era. It was feisty. I mean, you know, a lot of guys and gals did not like each other back then. You know, some of those grudges continue to percolate over into today, party-wise, individual-wise, or individually. But am I wrong here, or did you, come on, admit it. You looked at some of those clips from Bob Dole over the weekend and heard him speak and some of the debate clips and him cracking jokes at the most inopportune time to kind of loosen up the crowd and get a laugh and everything. You kind of miss those days of politics, don't you, right? You really kind of miss those days. I know I do. Now, look, I'm good for, you know, I do a show like this and we try to have fun. I don't consider myself hyper-partisan because there's always been partisanship in American politics. But it was just different back, say, around the time that Bob Dole ran in again. You know, ran in 96, coming up on 26 years ago. So the Facebook question I posted today, and I already have a couple of answers on this. What do you think? Was politics in the days of former GOP Senator Bob Dole, was it more dignified? Was it more revered? Was it more honorable? Was it just nicer? I mean, you could have rip-roaring arguments, and they did. I mean, hell, you go back to the founding days of this country and read the congressional record. You had guys calling each other names on the floor of the House and the floor of the Senate, talking about their parents, how they were the spawn of Satan and all this stuff. But there was also, I think, a revered kind of respect. Yeah, there's always been greasiness and kind of some ugliness in politics. But, I mean, come on, admit it. Admit it. It's okay. You can do this. This is group therapy till 6, and my rate per hour is pretty low anyway, so I think Medicare, Medicaid, all your Anthem Blue Cross, United Healthcare, Connecticut. Is Connecticut still around? I have no idea, because I've had them all in my lifetime in radio, every company. Oh, I'm on this insurance now, but I digress. Yeah, your insurance provider will cover my rate. See my receptionist. Oh, I can't say that anymore. See my assistant, my office manager on the way out today. But come on, admit it. You kind of waxed poetic a little, didn't you, over the weekend, looking at Bob Dole and listening to Bob Dole? And should we try and move back to those days? Or are those days of politics gone forever with what we have today, with the really wacky hyper-partisanship, the crazies, the nutcases we have on the right and on the left? As I like to say, the crazy, out-of-control 10% on both sides that make you want to scream someday. Do you miss the days of Bob Dole-type politics? Now, listen, it was written about over the weekend. Dole had a nasty streak, but he knew how to use it. He calibrated it. You know, he kept the sledgehammer, you know, aside when a scalpel would do. And I think that's our problem today. We don't always know when to use the scalpel or the sledgehammer, with all due respect to Peter Gabriel. What do you think? 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Was politics in the days of former Senator Bob Dole more dignified, more revered, more honorable? I think it was. I honestly think it was. Doesn't mean it wasn't hard fought. You look at things in different eras, heck. You watch a pro football game from the 50s or 60s, yeah, a long time ago, but those guys still hit. They hit hard back then. They injured guys a lot back then. But, you know, again, there are people who say it was better. Sports was better back then. Doesn't mean they didn't play hard. But sometimes in society you can play hard but not play dirty. You know what I mean? You can stay in bounds, and when the game is on, you can pound the living crap out of each other, but you can have a respect in the end. See, I don't think that respect's there, especially when you look at these dummies on both sides of the aisle, like Marjorie Taylor Greene, Lauren Boebert, Ilhan Omar, AOC. I mean, some of these people you say, you just want to say, get out. Get out. How many of you folks owe money to the state of Connecticut? Do you owe taxes? Do you owe tax money over the past few years, several years, maybe a decade or so? Are you worried about paying it off? Well, the governor today and DRS Commissioner Mark Boughton, that's the tax department, the Department of Revenue Services. Remember, folks, it's not tax, it's revenue. DRS Commissioner Mark Boughton and the governor gathering today in Madison along the shoreline at a library there to talk about a new website and a new push here, getrightct.com. And it's one of these tax amnesty things. They're not going to absolve you of all your tax, but you may be able to work out a partial payment to, you know, a lower interest rate and all that sort of thing, kind of make it easier for you to get back and make good with the state. Again, the website, if you want to check it out, getrightct.com. The governor was asked about this, and Commissioner Boughton chimed in after that. We'll get to that straight ahead. First, the governor asked about, hey, what's up with this tax forgiveness now, Mr. Governor?
And so when Mark Boughton, Commissioner of Revenue Services, brought up this idea, you sort of say, why now? Haven't we, you know, maybe done this before? And I thought it was just very convincing. The state's got a fresh start. We're coming out of COVID. Everybody needs a fresh start in life. This is like being able, John, to be able to erase any tax obligations, any disputes out there, end threats of criminal prosecution. It's like an etch-a-sketch system. You get a chance to restart in life. And I think that's what we tried to do with this tax amnesty. So I would urge you to sign up. I would urge you to get it done now. Clean out any of those disputes so you start, the new year, at least through January 31st, up front and center. I think what a difference it makes. It'll raise some revenues and help us do this going forward. And as, Mark Bouton said, this is not something we plan on doing in the near future for quite some time. So don't waste this opportunity. Here's your chance to make clean, get good, get some revenues back to the state of Connecticut so we can keep amazing libraries like this, Sonny, going strong. Thanks, everybody.
All right. Thank you, Governor. So Governor Ned Lamont earlier today saying, hey, take advantage of this GetRightCT.com website. So, again, look, I'm not poking into your personal business here, kids, but, look, I've been on a payment plan with the state a couple of times because I'm like, I can have them take out the money now or take it later. I'd rather have more money now, and then I'll pay them back later, which I've done on and off for a couple of years. So a lot of people, though, they get behind, so they may have to get them right with the state. GetRightCT.com. Now, we will hear from the former mayor of Danbury, Republican Mark Bouton, who's running the state tax department, the revenue services folks, right after this. Audio, of course, courtesy of the fine folks at the Connecticut Network. Check them out, ct-n.com. Well, you may have heard that. Mr. and Mrs. Ansonia, Shelton, Derby, Trumbull, Bridgeport, Stratford, Lower Fairfield County, and saying, I may owe some money to the state, and I'm hearing about this new program that was officially announced today. It's a new tax amnesty program. And you may say, I owe some money to the state. Should I step all forward here? They're going to put shackles and chains on me. Governor Ned Lamont saying earlier today, nothing of the sort, probably. The state's tax commissioner, Mark Bouton, Republican, former mayor of Danbury, saying, not really, but he did say, as he got into the particulars of this program, he did start by answering a question saying, yes, there are still severe things that the state tries to do, like liens on property and things like that.
Well, we do that. We do file liens when necessary. We can, we have a broad range of tools. One of the things I learned at DRS when I first took the role about a year ago was that we actually have our own investigators that are officers. And so, there is a criminal component here. Somebody's legitimately trying to not pay their taxes, but more importantly, trying to steal money from the state. So it ranges the whole spectrum. But here's the thing about this program. Right now, there are people that are appealing their audit, and they're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on lawyers, hundreds of thousands of dollars on accountants. You can get rid of all that expense. We'll cut your interest by 75%, and we'll cut the penalty completely. And that's about another 10% of the debt owed. And so why bother with all that? Just write the check, be done with it, and we'll move on. So it's a great deal. And in terms of enforcement, once this is done, we certainly have used all of our tools in enforcement, but it's tough. I mean, usually you're in court. We go back to court constantly. We have a whole team of lawyers that work on these kinds of debts, but this is just better for everybody. And I think it makes you feel good at the end, right? I mean, you're able to contribute to the great things that are happening in Connecticut.
So when you talk about the debt was here and you accepted something less, the amount you accepted, was it less than the actual tax debt, or what the savings to the person was, as you say, the penalty and the interest?
Like anything, even at a municipal level, people will tell you that, First Selectman Lyons will tell you that it's the interest that drives people insane over the original debt. So you can start out with a $60 car bill, and after 10 years, it's $1,000, right? So same thing here. Our interest is significant. We're going to waive that, and the penalty ranges about 10% of the debt. So that's a big, big weight off the shoulders for that person that, when they look at it, it seems that they're overwhelmed by being able to pay all that money. And so whether it's $500 or $5 million, we're willing to talk to you and try to get this resolved. And can't even utilize things like a payment plan and other things that both the deputy commissioner and I think may be appropriate depending on the business and the amount owed.
Could you break down some of the eligibility, the taxes included?
Sales and use tax and corporate. Yeah, basically the whole gamut, your personal income as well. Are all covered under this program. So, there's a whole tranche of people that have never paid at all, ever. And we may actually owe them money. So it would be good if they could use this system to start filing and being able to get any of those penalties waived. That's why people don't get into the system, is they think, oh, I don't want to pay a penalty. Well, we're not going to charge a penalty. So we may owe you money. So, but the point is, the more people we get involved, the more people have ownership over our state. The more people care about what's happening and the more engaged they become.
You said this could be the last time for a while, but there's always the question of, should we believe you? Because this is the, what, fourth one in the last 10 years, 8 years, whatever.
Well, I can tell you that I can't speak for future administrations, but I can tell you in the argument I made to the governor and to the senior staff was that this really needs to be the last time we do this. But, you know, I think you're going to find a pretty high rate of return this year when we're all done. This is a $12.5 million is a tremendous start, given that it's only a month old and given that, you know, we're running into the holidays and people are concerned. And so in terms of what they do with their cash. So it's a huge start for us and we're excited.
Most of the folks that signed up, are they more business or are they more personal?
It runs the spectrum. It's both. I mean, John and I talked to somebody over last weekend that owed us like $800 and was just afraid to come in and talk to us about it. And so we were able to straighten out her situation quickly. But we also have had large businesses come in that have been in dispute for years and said, look, we want to use this program. We want to get right and we want to move on. So it really runs the whole spectrum.
Property taxes, a different thing completely? This doesn't involve property taxes?
Right. We don't collect property taxes. In fact, one of the things we're talking about is that we need more data on the municipalities that are collecting property taxes, because we want to be able to explain to the governor and the administration and our legislators what the balance is, what the incidence is, and we think we need a little bit bigger hand. Not in collecting, not getting involved, but just getting the data from our local cities and towns. We talked about that internally the last couple of days.
What is the status of the, because you do have an incident study that's underway, right? Okay.
Yeah, we are consultants on board. They've been working steadily since the 22nd. We meet every day at 2 o'clock to talk about it and its direction and the kind of information that we need. And we are finding that that there are holes in our data that we've got to fill. And that's one of our asks that we're going to have with the legislature later on. Once this is done, that, you know, if you want something more encompassing, we can do it. We just need to have information.
All right, there you go. Comments earlier today on the Shoreline from Republican Mark Boughton, the state tax commissioner, the Department of Revenue Services, former multi-term mayor of Danbury, who has run for governor a couple of times, falling short in the primary process. A lot of people don't think he's conservative enough. You know, you Connecticut Republicans out there who want every Republican to be anti-abortion and completely pro-gun, or they don't follow the litmus test. So there you heard from the guy who's got a great head on his shoulders, but apparently isn't good enough to run for governor. Go figure. The website, once again, if you want to take advantage of this program, the Commissioner Boughton talked about getrightct.com, getrightct.com. And there you go. I did have a laugh when Commissioner Boughton said, well, you know, a lot of people are contacting us who've never paid taxes before. Never paid? How do you do that? Somebody want to give me a few lessons in that? I laugh when I heard that. Hey, we have people who've never paid. We may owe you money. What? How does that work? I'm afraid that I don't have a $5 bill in my pocket when I walk out of the house. Wow, somebody's got gouillons, huh? Joining us right now, return guest, influential guy at the state capitol. He's Democratic State Rep Steve Stafford, who also chairs the General Assembly's Judiciary Committee. Want to talk to him about something he was quoted as saying in the Hearst, Connecticut media papers a couple of days ago, which was very interesting. Hey, Steve, it's Paul here again. How are you?
Hey, good, Paul. How you doing?
Very good. Thanks for taking the time, Steve. I know you're busy. Thanks for coming on. So I'm reading the story, Steve, about a week and change ago, where you didn't sound too happy regarding a move that was made zoning-wise in Bridgeport for, I guess, the up to 5 marijuana retailers, which will pop up, you know, sometime in the future, maybe in 2022 as the process moves forward. So explain this whole thing to folks and what your concerns are, Steve.
Yeah, sure. So Paul, obviously, as you know, I was pretty influential in writing the cannabis legalization bill last session. And part of the impetus for passing that bill is really what we're seeing in a number of states and a number of communities around the country is that cannabis is a new and burgeoning industry that is creating not just tax revenue for states, but is creating jobs and economic opportunities, particularly for some of the most disadvantaged in communities. And particularly, obviously, a place like Bridgeport falls into that mix. And so I was really encouraged a few weeks ago when I met with the city's economic development office, and as part of a broader overall zoning change that the city is looking at, they wanted to treat new cannabis businesses much like liquor stores, that said, okay, maybe we don't want them next to a school or next to a church, but you know, they should be in prime commercial corridor locations. They are going to bring folks in. There's a significant amount of investment that goes into building one of these dispensaries. There's going to be new customers coming in, which will have a spillover effect to neighboring businesses and the like. And so we want to locate these businesses in our commercial corridors, on a place like Fairfield Avenue and Black Rock, on a place like downtown Bridgeport, on a place like Main Street in the North End, or Boston Avenue or East Main Street. Those are the types of locations where these establishments should go. And then what happened is at the really 11 and a half hour, as part of the overall larger zoning change, there was an amendment put forward by one member of the zoning commission that would say cannabis establishments could only go in adult entertainment zones. Well, we don't have adult entertainment zones in Bridgeport yet. There are some adult entertainment establishments located around the city, but there is no such thing as an adult entertainment zone.
Steve, it sounds like you might as well say like red light district. I said, what is that?
But of course we don't have a red light district in Bridgeport, right? We have, yes, there are a few adult entertainment establishments sprinkled around the city, but they're not zoned specifically for that. So what has happened is the Zoning Commission has created untold confusion in where these establishments can and should go in the city. And as a result of that, you know, Bridgeport is potentially missing out on a huge economic opportunity, not just the jobs and the physical investment, but under the Connecticut Cannabis Legalization Bill, a host municipality gets a 3% sales tax on everything sold. And I've seen estimates where that could mean hundreds of thousands, up to almost $1 million a year per dispensary. So for a city like Bridgeport, you know, you're talking $4 or $5 million possibly. You know, that's revenue that the city certainly could use you know, could be used for things like policing and education and offsetting mill rate and the like. And so I think it's highly, highly irresponsible for the Zoning Commission to have sort of made this change on the fly.
All right, Steve, hang on. We'll be right back with you. Want to get more into this? Democratic State Rep. Steve Stafford. More on zoning for marijuana retailers in Bridgeport coming up. First, traffic and weather together right here on WICC. As we continue with Bridgeport Democratic State Rep. Steve Stafford, who chairs the Judiciary Committee in the General Assembly. Some confusion Steve chimed in on a couple of seconds ago, and in the Hearst, Connecticut media papers the other day, on a pending zoning change, a possible zoning change that would put up to 4 to 5 of the allowed marijuana retailers in Bridgeport, likely coming in the next year or so, into so-called, you know, adult entertainment zones, whatever those are. And Steve, I had a couple of people who commented immediately on that when I posted the situation on our Facebook page. And one of our listeners asked, I think, the operative question: if you force these establishments, whether people like them or not, it's now in the law, it's codified in law, so let's see how it works. If you force these establishments, Steve, and frankly, some less than desirable places, how is that going to work for some people who, you know, maybe middle-aged folks, elderly folks who may want to try an edible or try marijuana as they're older for whatever? You know, is location going to be a detriment, Steve, to getting part of this local segment of the economy working here? Because face it, Steve, you and I know some people just are scared of locations, be that as it is.
Yeah, I think that's certainly one of my concerns. And like I said, I think we should be inviting folks who, you know, want to buy these products into the city to spend money, right? I mean, let's face it, a bunch of the surrounding suburbs around Bridgeport are talking about moratoriums or otherwise putting in their own restrictions, which I think is short-sighted on behalf of those municipalities. But if they're going to do so, then Bridgeport should take advantage, and Bridgeport should put one on the Trumbull line, and Bridgeport should put one on the Fairfield line. and if those residents want to come into Bridgeport to buy their cannabis products, all the better, because Bridgeport then gets the tax revenue from it, and hopefully while those people are here, they, you know, pick up a sandwich or frequent another boutique of some sort.
The process, Steve, as it is now, and I have people always asking me because they know I follow this stuff. They say, you know, what's going on now? What are the retail sales? Can I please stop going to Massachusetts? And I guess, Steve, now is the process underway of vetting some of these applicants who are looking to be equity applicants? And there's a careful process, I guess, of finding out who they are, who's backing them, making sure this is all being done on the up and up, correct?
Yeah, so the actual application process is not quite open yet. We're expecting that to open up shortly into the new year here. There actually is a meeting of the Social Equity Council tomorrow, and I think folks are kind of waiting to see what kind of guidance comes out of that meeting, and hopefully we start to get some answers to exactly how the process is going to play out and the timeline of when you can actually put your ping pong ball in the, you know, in the big wheel to hopefully get your number pulled to get a license. So stay tuned on that, but I think we will start seeing some news in the next few weeks, if not months, on that.
And I know the fear here, Steve, from what I've talked to people and reading, is you want these people that are getting these licenses, or at least getting their names on the applications and pen and paper and online, you know, to be on the up and up. You don't want any, I guess, Steve, the term would be a straw applicant or a shadow applicant, is, well, yeah, I feel my neighborhood was wronged, but there's some mega company behind me saying, you know, you apply and we'll give you the money. I guess we want to prevent that.
Yeah, I think that's exactly the point, is that we're trying to make sure that this burgeoning new industry is sort of populated by folks who are most adversely impacted by the war on drugs. And that's why it's a business opportunity for many folks in Bridgeport. You know, it's not about race. What the social equity applicant is sort of the neighborhood or community you came out of. And what we've done is done a very detailed look at census tracts around the state and those that have had kind of the most arrests and a sort of prosecution for low-level drug crime over a period of decades. And those are the areas that we're looking to target with not just investment in terms of who can open these establishments, but then a significant portion of the revenue will then go back into those communities for community betterment projects, drug education programs, and the like, in order to, again, try to lift up communities.
Steve, as always, we thank you. State Rep. Steve Stastrom. Steve, be good. If we don't speak, happy holidays, and we'll chat down the road. Steve, thanks. Appreciate it.
Take care, Paul.
Steve, appreciate it. Thanks. Steve Stastrom there, Democratic State Rep. Bridgeport, saying, hey, what is this with putting Bridgeport marijuana retailers like in red light districts? Or if you were in Boston, the combat zone. Paulie, let's go to the zone. No, thank you. Yes. They didn't call them adult entertainment areas in Boston when I was there at BU. You know, and Whitey Bulger was walking the streets there in Southeast. Paulie, it's a combat zone, eh? All right, let's check traffic and weather together. We'll do a little business, get caught up on that Wall Street and more. It is all right here. What'd you think of what Steve said? It's pretty funny when he said, no, the Bridgeport marijuana retailers should be on the Fairfield line, the Stratford line, the Trumbull line. That's actually pretty funny. Imagine that. It's like when you go to New Hampshire, right? What do you see? And I tell people this, and they think I'm joking. It's true, though, right? What do you see like 30 seconds after you cross from Massachusetts into New Hampshire and you're on 91? What do you say? 30 seconds, right? State Liquor Store, right? The off-ramp, too. Never been up there, folks. Yeah, State Liquor Stores, they have their own exit and entry ramps. It's a thing of beauty in New Hampshire. Live free or die.